ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
ABC Sports coverage of NRL Sunday.
Rugby League is on your radio.
ABC Sport Digital Radio.
And ABC Listen.
Can our panel of ABC Rugby League experts handle six questions in 3 minutes? Can they avoid getting stuck on the fence? And can the referee, Andrew Moore, avoid going into the bunker? It's time for six again.
Let's start with Boardroom Jonty. Gibbsy, what's impressed you most about Canterbury's recent return to form?
Well, last night, Andrew, I thought they attacked really well. Obviously, you've got to look at the opposition. The West Tigers have been on down a bit. I think their attack was a lot better and the conditions might have been better. And what about the turnaround from Jethro Rinnakama? Same game last week. He gave up that try to Xavier Savage. They were no hope, but it's their attack. I think normally it's the other way around. You get the defence right, your attack comes. I think they need to attack. That's the way the game has gone.
Luke Lewis, 7 rounds left after this weekend. Will Melbourne, Canberra or Brisbane be playing finals footy?
I'm going to say no, no and probably no. I don't think any of them will make it. I like Canberra. I want to see Canberra get there. I don't think they'll be able to get there now with the injury of obviously Hudson Young. And I think Melbourne are just way off the the normal standard for the Melbourne side. So, look, I'm going to say no to all three.
Yeah, I'm going to say the Bulldogs can make it and the Raiders can make it.
Oh, OK, we'll look back into that very, very shortly. Gibbsy, is Tom Dearden's return today enough to convince you North Queensland will be playing in the finals?
Yes, it is. I think Tom Dearden has had a nice break and obviously coming back from a serious injury. What will be interesting is who they leave out. Now, if they're going to leave out a player like Jake Clifford, obviously they've got depth. So I think Tom Dearden's involvement will take a bit of pressure off Scott Drinkwater because he seems to set up everything they do. So I think it's a big in and depth is paramount if you're to make a noise.
Louis, how should West Tigers fans be feeling today?
Very disappointed, very upset, and I think they're going to look back on the year and say it's another year that they're back to normal. I had big expectations on the way they started, but after last night's performance, I think it's going to be downhill for them for the rest of the year.
It's been a rubbish year and they started poorly. They had 2 players in the sin bin. They lost all their discipline. They're in a world of hurt, the poor old West Tigers, and their fans deserve better than this.
Gibbsy, penalties and set restarts have noticeably declined over the past couple of months. A, have you noticed? And B, is the product better for it?
I think the product's better for it, but it's just some of the obvious ones that they might leave go. And, I think it is. I think we don't want to see, referees waving their arms like windmills, and we don't want to see the pea blown out of the whistle. When there's a penalty to be given, give it. But if it was not going to be a full-blown penalty, don't give 6 again. I think it's better.
Luke Lewis, Andrew Abdo's reign as NRL CEO ended midweek. What's his greatest legacy in your view?
I think he's got a lot, but I'm going to say keeping the game alive in obviously the crazy times we went through COVID-19, and I'm going to say obviously working out the new broadcast deal, I think, for our great game and moving forward. I think it's probably the greatest deal we've seen in our history, so I think he's going to be remembered for a lot.
I think that's right, Luke. The start of it was COVID. He and Peter Vlahos did a great job to negotiate that. And then they've come up with a big, 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 big broadcast deal.
Yeah, I think no matter how you look at it, like the rugby league, NRL was on the bones of its backside when Peter Vlahos came in as ARL Commission Chair and Andrew Abdo appointed as his CEO of the National Rugby League. And to see where they're at now financially is unbelievable. Like, they're so successful, so much in profit right around the game. It is, you would not have possibly imagined that 6 years ago.
No, and they did talk about, too, they had a goal when they come in after COVID about they realised how, bad they were when it come to, investing and financial setup. So,
well, they didn't really invest in anything.
No, well, now they've invested in a lot, right? So the game's grown, not just in, the broadcast revenue and the salary caps and everything that we look at, but now they've actually starting to grow a lot of assets too. So very smart, 2 smart men at the top, done a great job, kept our game alive, and now we're thriving, and I think it's just onwards and upwards from here.
Yeah, and Andrew Abdo, just in case you don't know, he's taking up the lucrative position of Chief Executive of Tennis Australia, and that was a position sought after from very senior people right around the world. So it's a real credit to Andrew Abdo to get that position. And You know, it's almost yin and yang, Gibbs, isn't it, between Peter Volandis, who's very bullish and outspoken and just runs through barriers all over the place, whereas Andrew Abdo's a little more measured. Obviously, he's been right on board with what the ARL Commission has been after, but the yin and yang has worked beautifully.
Yeah, I think that's correct, Andrew. And look, he did a great job, and obviously he helped Peter Volandis, who's the main man, undoubtedly, but he helped him, you know, negotiate through some of these difficult stages, gave him a steady hand. And just you say yin and yang, just imagine if you had, you know, two bull at the gates like Peter Volandis. I don't think that would have worked. They obviously got on. And he can't really do much more, Andrew, so he's going with a plum job at Tennis Australia. So I say, yeah, well done to him. Enjoy that. That'll have its own challenges. So, but look, he's done a good job. There's no doubt.
Now, you were saying what about those teams that could make the finals? The question was Melbourne, Canberra, Brisbane. Louis was no. And what did you say, Njoti?
I threw in the Bulldogs and Raiders. I think now they're a real-life chance. And depending, it's going to change from week to week, Andrew, but
yeah,
depending on what happens with this game with the Gold Coast and Manly, all of a sudden, they now have hope. And Canterbury's getting a little bit, I don't want to get excited about them, but the Raiders, and I agree with Louis, the loss of Hudson Young, but I'm putting the pen through Melbourne and Brisbane. So I'm not saying that the Bulldogs and Raiders are going to make it, but they are the most likely. And probably the Bulldogs, who have got some strength to come back with your Crichtons and so on, they may be able to rally and flum their way into eighth position, depending on what happens above them.
Yeah, so Canberra next week, 3 o'clock Saturday again at home against the West Tigers, who appear to just be crumbling. And Canterbury-Bankstown, big game, Louis, will be there at 5:30 at Stadium Australia, Canterbury and the Warriors. So do they continue their good form of late, Canterbury, or do they crash back to earth against the Warriors, who are in second spot?
Yeah, I'd like to have a really good opinion about the Bulldogs after they play someone, you know, pretty you know, good. And the Warriors are that. They've been playing some good football. They're sitting at the top of the competition with the Panthers. That yeah, look, I'm still not bullish on them. I feel like there's something missing with the Bulldogs. I can't put my finger on it. I don't know what it is. But if they are to sneak in the top eight, I think they've got to have to go on a crazy run to do anything.
It's right, Luke. It's still unlikely. But you saw last night, and you're right about, you know, the who they're playing. I mean, the West Tigers, and you know, they're almost, you know, Barry Gibb and Andy Gibb like the easy bits at the moment. You don't like saying that, but that is a really difficult assignment for them now.
Wasn't that Stevie Wright? The easy beats?
Yeah, it was.
Yeah. You're talking BGs.
BGs, yeah. I mucked that one up completely.
And for someone who's got the most eclectic jaunty rock of all time.
The last time I saw Luke Lewis, when was it?
Friday.
I had it on my mind. Okay, so we'll leave that there. Now, I've just recovered a little bit. But no, that was a terrible faux pas, and that's just the bright lights of the studio. But Canterbury do have to show it against a better side. But I think the Dragons, even last night, who were going better, they really took it to the Warriors. And
we'll
they
get to that, Jonty. Come on, mate. You know the order of events. You know the order of events.
40 years, but you'll get
there. Do you know what happens today, though, Lou? I think this is why Gibbsy's so pumped up. A, you're not there to bother him. So I think that's huge.
I'm excited.
But B, you're excited because today the first thought is you. Not John Gibbs being the first thought. We've already done that. But it's your brainchild today.
Do you know what's funny, though?
But I played it over my mind many times.
Gibbsy, you always give us little hints of, you know, morsels, this, that, in the oven. You didn't give me, you had no one to talk to today about your little morsels. Why don't you give us a little bit of a hint about your first four today?
Yeah.
Don't fall for it.
I'm not going to.
I know you want to.
No, you were trying to get me to, you know, type in things before, and I wasn't falling for that, so I'm not falling for that one.
Do you love rugby league? NRL Sunday on ABC Sport.
On your radio, ABC Sport Digital Radio.
And ABC Listen.
Matt Elliott on the call last night. He's on the touchline. He had some interesting things to say at the end of our coverage in regards to the Jerome Luai situation at the West Tigers.
And there's people booing him out there. They're booing the wrong person. I've been saying this for 20 years. The player movement system in our game has gone from disgraceful to pathetic, in my opinion. Okay, I watch other sports where it's, you know, there's drafts and it's revered and people tune in to watch it. There's people there booing Jerome Blue Eye tonight, right? I was on the field.
Tigers fans.
They were booing him.
Yeah.
They're booing the wrong person. I get where they're coming from, West Tigers. They're going, well, look, we can use an extra amount of money, 500k or whatever it is, and we can invest in some of these young players and make sure we keep them at the club. I get that. That's a decision they made. I just think the timing of that decision. I watched Jerome Luai play a month ago. He came up with two man of the match performances, absolutely tore the opposition apart. So if we think that this stuff doesn't impact the individual, we're kidding ourselves.
That was Matt Elliott after the game last night. We're about to be joined in the box by Rebecca Frizzell, the majority owner of the Gold Coast Titans. But I need a reaction, Louis, from you and Gibbsy quickly about what Matt Elliott raises there. Is the system completely broken in terms of players being able to transfer and sign? It hasn't changed in a long, long time, but does it need to?
I think so. Look, I don't like it. I'm a big believer that if you sign a contract, you should honour it. But obviously, we'll get Rebecca's view on this a little bit later. But I think, you know, coming in, it's such a business now. I remember when I was at Penrith, it was all about rugby league. It was all about just being, loyal to the club. But other things happen. There's salary caps. There's different parts of, moving parts that sort of need to be looked at outside the game of rugby league. So
you know who it really sucks for? It doesn't really suck for the players. Like, Graham Lewis set himself up for life, and I don't know that anyone should be able to deny any player that. But it sucks for the fans. They're there booing Jerome Luai, their big signing of the last couple of years, because the system is at play. It's not Jerome Luai's fault what's been happening.
No,
as
correct.
Matt Elliott said, it is the system, and they're the people I feel for, the fans of these clubs, because while players just get on with it, it is a business and it's a game you all love to play. But for fans, they don't want to see their players knowing that they're going somewhere else 12 months from
now. No, correct. And the other thing is too, though, I think the biggest problem here was Jerome Luai's contract. In his contract, he had so many different clauses.
Yes.
So I actually think that's actually gone against him in this situation. So he's gone over to Papua New Guinea, he's signed for really good money, and he's going to be a great buy for New Guinea. But I think the way the situation, the contract is there, why would you let him stay there when you've got young kids coming through who could be a lot more beneficial to your side moving forward? So that's a tough one.
Gibbsy, what do you make of it all?
A noble idea, Matt wants a draft, and I agree with all your commentary, but it's just not going to happen. In reality, draft will never happen. It would be fantastic. I agree with Matt, but it's been shown on more than one occasion to be illegal. It's a restraint of trade. And with the new sides coming in, like the Bears, the Chiefs, we're going to have a 20th side, it's only going to get worse. So these types of things are going to happen more regularly. But just to singularly blame the form of the West Tigers on what's happened with Luai, I think that's preposterous. It's deeper than that.
Oh, 100%. And there's no way there's going to be a draft, but they've got to do something. This system is not good enough for league fans.
NRL Sunday on ABC Sport.
Rugby league is on your radio. ABC Sport Digital Radio.
And ABC Listen.
It is Women in League Round, and one of the most influential and certainly a great advocate for rugby league in the Gold Coast Titans is their majority owner, Rebecca Frizzell. She's here in the broadcast box. Nice to see you, Rebecca.
Lovely to see you, and thank you for having me.
It's great to be here. We don't get the chance to come up to Robina all that often with our local broadcast coverage up here, but the ground still looks as good as it did when it first came into being.
Not a bad place to call a game of rugby from, is it?
It's not bad.
A bit of league here is good.
Yeah, couldn't agree more. Your interest in the Gold Coast Titans goes back how far? Because it's over a decade, isn't it?
No, since 2006 when they first formed. So
two decades.
Yeah, we started out as commercial sponsors. Funny how life has these twists and turns that you're not expecting. But I'd never been a league fan. I'd never really watched the game.
Right.
But I understood what it did commercially for a community, how it brings people together. And I just fell in love with it over time. And
so what drew it to you in the first place? Was it through the sponsorship and you came to games, basically?
Literally through the sponsorship, and then starting to understand what it meant for a city. And to me, you need to have national sporting teams for a city to truly mature. Gold Coast has been a wonderful home to us, and this was a way for us to contribute back to our city and keep the team here. If you'd said to me back then we'd end up owning a rugby league team, I would have suggested you needed medical help.
Right. And what about now?
Now?
Are you the one that needs medical help?
Literally. Yeah. You'd say I've had too many head knocks now.
Yeah.
But yeah, I absolutely love the game. But what I love about it is the people in it. It's such a wonderful, wonderful sport, and the lives it changes and the impacts it has on people. I'm so fortunate and blessed to be involved.
Rebecca, when you were younger, did you have a love and a passion for rugby league?
Not at all.
No.
No. I even refused to meet Gordon Tallis because I thought he just looked like the world's greatest thug I'd ever seen, and I'd only seen snippets of him.
His nickname, wow, the Raging Bull, probably didn't help either.
No. Well, we call his son, what's Fernando, the little Raging Fernando Bull.
Yeah. That's awesome. Now, looking back on, I suppose, your career and your journey, you know, what's changed, I suppose, most for women in rugby league today?
When I first came in, when I was appointed chair, I was the first female chair, and I never forget walking into the NRL headquarters in Sydney, and I walked into this boardroom, and they were all male chairmen, which I didn't have an issue with, but I remember my knees literally shaking under the table because I could see the look on their faces going, oh, God, here comes equal opportunity. And I could, and I'm like, hello. I could literally see it. But they were really good men, and they understood that we're there just to make a contribution. And sometimes diversity is fantastic if it's used correctly, and balance is great. You know, you've always got to have balance, and it brings a different viewpoint. And I think back then we were leaving half the population behind. We were leaving them on the sidelines. And if I look at both of you, I'm sure you don't make decisions unless you speak to your better half. I'm sure, yeah. I'm yet to meet a man brave enough to buy a car without talking to his wife about the colour.
I don't think I've ever had a salesman address me.
Yeah, exactly.
So I said your name. But yeah. Rowan Sims is a colleague of ours, Rebecca, yes, who's in great her own lady, right, one of the, yep, real, you know, she's led the pathway for so many people. And on Thursday night in our coverage, I was talking to her about women in league, and she said the big difference she thinks is that now the women in league are not just the volunteers who have been amazing, the mums, the grandmas, the wives, and the partners doing stuff under the radar. It's people like you in influential positions in the game. And that's what's different now as opposed to, well, you're talking 20 years of your involvement in the game, certainly in those two decades. That is a huge opportunity now for women to have an influence in the game rather than just bits and pieces.
It's so interesting. I was thinking about this yesterday, and I credit Katie Page.
Yeah.
With her passion to make this happen. She's the one that came up with the idea of the Women in League round, and she used her commercial force to make it happen.
I was we did a bit of work with Katie Page, me and my wife, Sonia, at the very start when she brought it in, and we did the pink jersey at Penrith.
Yes.
And it was, I thought the concept was amazing, and now just to see where it's gone is mind-blowing.
But you need people like that, brave champions that are prepared to take the fight on, and she did. And I just sent her a note then. I said, Katie, this week's all because of you. And now we've got a professional, you know, teams playing now, and hopefully the next step will see the women being paid as professional athletes. That'll happen in time. And it does take time. I mean, you think about how long it took for men to earn a living out of it. Yeah. That's only just really happened in the last 20 years or slightly longer than that. But now you'll see that happen with women. All the young girls playing, looking out the window now, looking at all these young kids. You know, I could not be prouder of the way the league has really supported women in the game. And our club doesn't happen without the people in our commercial teams, our volunteering, our coaching. Every single part of the business is affected by women. And it's not because one's better than the other. It's just a different opinion and a different view. And it works well. It's just a respectful balance.
When Lou and I walk into the ground at 10:30 this morning, and we saw a couple of young girls in Parramatta gear. So they're here to watch the NRLW game, which was really, really cool.
How'd we let them in?
One thing I'm sad, that's right. One thing I'm sad about, Rebecca, for you, is that John Gibbs is not here with us, part of our coverage. He's in the boardroom in Sydney because it's a special experience being with Gibbsy. Jonty.
Well, this is a great experience for me to talk to you remotely, Rebecca.
Now, thank you.
Now, you, coincidentally, you started your journey in rugby league and with the Gold Coast 20 years ago, which is when the Women in League round started. So this is the 20th anniversary, and I know that you're big on it becoming a norm and recognition being as such that we don't need a Women in League round because they'll just be accepted as part of it.
Exactly right. I really live for the day that we don't have that round anymore, and it's not because I don't care about it, but it should just be the norm and we don't need to have it. A bit like International Women's Day. Like, the other flip side is, and I know I'm probably going to get into trouble with this, but there's no International Men's Day. So it should it should just be normalised.
We're hard done by Louis, really. When you
Get a violin out. Hang on. I've got the world's smallest.
Yes. Sorry, Jonty, away you go.
No, I got to say, now you being the first to chair, being the first female to chair a rugby league club, back in 2014, you sort of mentioned it briefly. Did you think, gee, some of them have got narrow, boneheaded ideas?
Probably only two of them really did, and they're not in the game anymore. And they were that probably two, but that's, you know, and also, you've got to think, I was dealing back then with men from a different era as well. They were older men probably coming towards the end, and they were good humans. They were great humans. They just had a different, I guess, perspective or view, and it was a big change. But other than that, I had just some of the best blokes around me, and I was incredibly lucky that it was supportive and caring and literally held my hand and taught me the ropes because they knew I had no idea which way the game was going.
Now, we mentioned so briefly good. The NRL program, NRLW program that you have up there, and you've done a great job there, but you've had a wonderful rugby league person, don't want to say woman, but person in Karen Murthy to really guide you through all this.
You're so right. We went after Murph when she was in the integrity unit, and I rang her and I said, Murph, we want you to be our female head coach, because I'd known her from being a Gold Coaster. She's like, oh, mate, I can't coach. I've never coached. I'm a player and I'm a copper, and I'm at the NRL. I said, you're a good person, and it's good humans that can do this. You know the game inside out. I mean, her career speaks volumes of what she's achieved. Anyway, she took the plunge. She came up. She is just a first-class, extraordinary human.
Grand final first year too.
Yeah. And that's what it comes back to, good humans, right? And she's a great human. I have so much time for Murph, and the girls just love her. And the other thing what people don't realise, and I don't think we tell a good enough story about this, Karen Murphy's our full-time female head coach. I would suggest she's one of maybe a handful in the world that are coaching a national team full-time as a female.
And she's got a lot of respect. I know all the girls love her as well. They always talk about her and say she's a great coach, she's a great human being. And that leads me into a question, actually, because I know you've employed some really good people at the club, and one of a good mate of mine, Scotty Sattler, I love him. He's looked like he's on the right sort of path with those kind of people. How do you find, you know, coming in and making those decisions, and how do you know they're the right people?
Well, I've known Sats a long, long time from when he was first at the Titans, and he's always impressed me. He's a good human, quality person. He knows the game, and what I think we needed in our building was more football IP, and we've certainly got that now. And, you know, people passionate about their team and this city, and the people we've put together certainly are, and then you add in the extra layer of Maddie and Gordy, and their IP and their passion for the club has been extraordinary. So, like, it's a joy. And one thing that we have at work, and I think Dean, my colleague standing here, would agree, we make it fun. You got to laugh. I mean, they're always threatening to report me to HR. I said, don't. I'll just fire HR.
That's the best.
But, you should be able to bounce them easy.
Yeah. And I said, guys, you got to laugh, right? We spend a lot of time in a work capacity.
Yeah.
If you're not enjoying it, find something you love. You got to love what you do. And you know what? We're not saving lives here. We're not doctors. We're playing sport. Let's enjoy it along the way.
Can I just follow up about you talking the interest in the game here locally, because I know from an outsider looking in, it's that the common talk about Gold Coast is it's a transient community, although I believe that's not quite as true these days as it once was, and that it's really hard, A, for players to come here and be as focused as they might be in other places. Let's face it, it's one of the great tourist attractions in the world, the Gold Coast, and B, because people coming and going, it's hard to get a regular fan base. Is any of that true? How big an issue are those things in getting a real fan base?
Okay, so if I go back 20 years, that used to be a problem. Mm. It's not now. So tourism is the fourth biggest economic driver for the Gold Coast. It's no longer the number one, number four now. And so when you think about the size of the city, that means we've reached a maturity level where we're not relying on one industry for success. So that's why you'd see the peaks and troughs of our local economy. That's gone now, and we've got massive migration. Our population's 680,000 now and on a huge growth trajectory. There's so many career opportunities. What we're finding is people want to come here. You know, they want to come and live here. What, you want to go to Melbourne or you want to live on the Gold Coast? They're saying, I want to come to the Gold Coast.
Yeah.
It's a beautiful lifestyle. And they're not just moving for the lifestyle. They're moving for opportunity as well and affordability.
Yeah, and then I've got to ask you too. You're involved in the Olympics coming up as well. How's all that going?
Do I not strike you as an athlete? Hello.
That's well, what we were thinking, yeah.
I like how you're just involved in everything, especially in sport. I love that.
I feel so honoured and privileged. I've got Greg Norman in his Titans jersey along with Andrew Rivers. Yeah, they're following the club. I'm very passionate. Queensland and the Gold Coast has given me, I came up here as a kid from Canberra at age 7 or 8, and I've been given so many opportunities here to, you know, explore and do different things. And I feel if I can give back to this state in any way, I will. And I'm very grateful for that. So
good.
Yeah, I think the games are going to be, Queensland's never going to look the same again, and that's in a positive way, the opportunity that's coming.
One more, Rebecca, and tell me to mind my own business, but we were just talking about Andrew Abdo and the impact he and Peter Vlandys had together running rugby league. You owning this Gold Coast Titans club, it's often been said you only own it because you love it. You're not, never going to make a cent. But now we know how profitable rugby league is. Does that go on to clubs? Is it a position where you can be profitable these days?
Yeah, you can. And our view has always been to run it like a business. It should pay its own way. We don't take any money out of it. Any money that, if there's any money left over, it gets reinvested straight back in to make it a stronger... And that's how we've always treated our business. But it must be sustainable. Otherwise, you're kidding yourself about what you're running. Mm. It's got to be financially sound so it can continue to employ and be resilient long-term financially and make other investments to help underpin it, you know, because weather affects us, economy affects us, playing quality affects us. There's lots of things can, you know, change the balance sheet, and we need to make sure we've got the depth behind it that we continue forward. Well, so I'm not going to retire on it, put it that way.
Right, okay. But the signs are good, though, that things are looking up for the Gold Coast Titans, which is great. So good to have you come into the box.
Thank you for having me.
You've turned on the weather in the end. It was a bit risky. I know it was a windy ride coming in this morning, but it looks beautiful.
I rang Foz this morning and said, mate, I looked, and last time I think we still got you on the payroll. I said, I'm going to give you a directive, an employee warning, if you do not do the right thing today.
There's that HR department.
How weird is that, though? You had him playing here last year, and here he is now coaching against your club. It's quite crazy.
We love Foz. We miss him a lot. No, just let him know. I said, I don't want to be issuing you a written warning, Foz, but it could be coming.
You will if you have to. Yeah. Rebecca Frizzell, great to see you. Thanks so much.
Lovely. Good luck today. Thank you for having me.
Hi, this is Chris Barth, a new member of the ABC's weekend team this year. I'm a Parramatta Eels supporter. Can be difficult at times, but I do love the NRL and I have many thoughts about it. Many. But right now, we are after your first thought. The first thing that comes to your mind when Andrew mentions the topic. Don't be like John Gibbs. It's not your second or third or fourth, fifth or sixth thought. Just your first thought. Sorry, Gibbsy.
Okay, thanks, Chris. But my lips have been sealed. I haven't given any hints, and I've only had one thought. And I thought, how will I play this? I thought, you know what? I'm going to play it straight. And in a couple of years, we'll be choosing the 15th immortal. Now, if you were to choose the next immortal of the game, in your opinion, who should it be? Okay? So your first thought, I'll get Louis and Andrews in a moment. But 0467 920 222 is our text number. You can phone us, 1300 361 700. I've given you a little bit of extra time there, Louis. Who is your first thought?
Oh, I went next one for sure. Has to be Cam Smith.
Okay.
Cam Smith. I just feel like the way that he played the game, what he did for our game, you look at what he's achieved in our game, every award, every accolade, he's won every... I think he even won one stage here where he won everything, where he won State of Origin, Australia, Grand Final, Clive Churchill, even the Golden Bell. I think it was something where he just won everything in 1 year. I think that alone makes him as immortal. So I'd have to go Cam Smith.
I didn't want you to copy me, Louis, so I just held back mine because mine's also Cameron Smith. I think in a couple of years' time.
Oh, we could go for a threefer here,
well,
I reckon.
Well, it could be, but I'm sure that our listeners will have different views. But Cam Smith, he wasn't always the most popular. What about you, Andrew?
I hate to do this, Jonty, because the first thought was Cam Smith.
Yep.
430-odd NRL games and all the tests, and he's an absolute walk-up stunt to me, the immortal of immortals.
Yeah, 11 series wins in State of Origin, 42 games, 56 test matches. You can name whatever you like. And by the time the next immortal is chosen, he certainly will have been retired long enough. Anyway, it's up to you, listeners. 0467 920 222. You can text us or phone us on 1300 361 700. I didn't think it would be that narrow, but us three going for Cam Smith is quite remarkable. But it's over to you.
Well, you better run through the other 14 immortals.
Well, okay. So we had I should have him in front of me, of course, but we had the
immortal morsels.
No, I've got them all. So Clive Churchill was one. Bob Fulton was two. Then we went Rez Gazzi and Johnny Raper, the Dragons stars, and Graham Langlands, Wally Lewis, then Arthur Beetson. Then we had Andrew Johns at the eighth. Then we had a huge influx, which was Dally Messenger, Frank Burge, Dave Brown, and then Sticks, Norm Proven and Mal Meninga. And then the 14th, a couple of years ago, was the induction, which I agreed with and I was there for that night, was Ron Coote. But already Cameron Smith also, in that same induction of Ron Coote that night, was inducted into the Hall of Fame. So there's your 14. Who will be the 15th?
That is a magnificent recall, Jonty. Well done. I was just doing up, putting you in the, under the spot there.
Well, I've been doing a bit of study on it.
1-300-361-700 or text 0467-920-222. Your first thought on the next immortal. Sav says JT, absolute champion. Wendy from Canberra says Billy Slater, although I want to name a Raider. Hi, Andrew, John and Luke. My first thought, Peter Sterling, says Miles from the Northern Beaches, and have a great show, team. Great intro, Gibbsy. Jonathan Thurston is my first thought, says the Sheriff. Another here says Sturlo. Ian from Brisbane says, without a doubt, Nathan Cleary. I can't imagine he'll be the next one, though, as he's still playing, but he will be one, Ian. You're dead set right there. Pete in Townsville says, first thought, Darren Lockyer. Kath in Townsville, another one for the great Jonathan Thurston. Townsville Seagull, first thought, Brett Kenny. Fatty and Sterling, Rabs call them the Laughing Girls. Fatty and Sterlo. How is Fatty going, Jonty?
He's going very well. He's playing good golf and enjoying life up in the Gold Coast. You might see him there today. He might, you know, just float by.
Oh, it'd be lovely to see Fatty as always. Jeff has phoned through. Hello, Jeff. How are you going?
I'm good, Andrew. How are you?
Excellent. Thank you, Jeff.
So my immortal is that it's got to be Brad Fittler. Like, you know, won two premierships, played in 6GF, one Origin, one Test, coached Origin Series wins, had a media career, I know, a rival station, but, you know, like, he's done it all.
Yeah, no, he's still, we see him all the time with his work at Channel 9, does a great job for them, and yeah, you're right, he's done it all. He's a great, great player. He was a great, great player, Brad Fittler, and he's had a bit of a sniff at the coaching with the Roosters and more recently New South Wales. But his, Louis, all I can picture when Jeff talks about Brad Fittler is that patented step of his.
Yeah, look, I love Freddie. I think he is my childhood hero. And I'd love to see him as an immortal because in my eyes, he's immortal. I love the way that he played. But you're right, that left foot step was lethal. But it wasn't just that. It was the way that he played and he competed. I just love the way that he played and competed. So, and he had everything. Don't forget, he played centre. He played 5'8". He played lock. He'd play everywhere.
I still remember his debut for Penrith against Wests all those years ago as a teenager. Good shout. Thanks, Jeff.
Thanks, Andrew.
Getting to know you.
Let's get to know one of the all-time great fullbacks that we've ever seen in rugby league. He played 300-plus games for his beloved Roosters, also a champion for New South Wales, Australia and Italy. I speak of Anthony Minicello. How are you, Minnie?
G'day, Andrew. How are you, mate?
Always good to catch up, mate. I'm going particularly well and I'm looking forward to getting to know you because I feel like your whole career, both on the field and off the field, has been part of my little cycle in life. What's the nickname you most prefer?
Well, obviously the easy one is Mini.
Yes.
The fans obviously call me the Count a lot, but in the inner circle, it's sort of the Mountain Cat, Min Cat is the preferred one. So
right,
I've got plenty of nicknames, but it's the Min Cat.
Well, they're all good ones. How did you get the Count? I understand what it represents, but how did you get it? Who gave it to you?
I think Brett Kenny was my first ever representative coach for City Origin.
Right.
And he goes, mate, you look like the Count from Sesame Street. And I don't know, like the fans ran with it for my whole career, but in the sort of inner circle of all the boys, it was always Mini, Minza, Mincat, the Cat, you know? So quite funny.
That really is a lot. Do you have a middle name?
Michael.
Michael, okay. First job you ever had?
First job, I was actually cutting grass for a couple of different properties around Casula and Preston. So my mum would help me and she would do all the edging and I would cut the grass and I would get $20, $25. So that was probably my first job at 14, something like that. I did work at McDonald's for 6 months when I was 16 and then I signed with the Roosters and I went, I'm out of here.
Done, yes. Well, that leads to the next question about when you realised that rugby league could actually be your future.
Well, I was in Year 10. I was 16, and you know, obviously loving all sports, but rugby league was definitely the favourite. And then it was, yeah, the great Arthur Beetson. I was Western Suburbs Junior, and the great Arthur Beetson sort of took me out of the West and put me into the East and got a two-year contract at the Roosters. And I remember at the time, I was like, that's it, to my parents. I'm like, that's my new goals. And play first grade for the Roosters. And I remember my dad saying, well, you're Year 10, you can definitely go for it, but you need to either finish Year 11 and 12 or get yourself a trade while you're playing for the Roosters. And, you know,
how appealing was that to a 16-year-old on the verge of stardom?
Well, I didn't put too much attention on school at the time, so yeah. I said, you know what, I'll get myself a trade. And my dad helped me get a job out at Austral as a cabinet maker or joiner, and I did the trade coming up through the lower grades of the Roosters. And, yeah, once I made my first grade debut, that job got left behind as well.
We are getting to know Roosters legend Anthony Minicello here on NRL Sunday. So are you still handy with your hands now?
Look, I don't mind a little DIY thing, but, nowhere near as good as when I was training, that's for sure.
What's the best thing you've ever made or the thing that made you most proud?
I actually made, when I was coming up to the lower grades, Freddie Fielder, the guy at the time and the man, he was like, mate, I heard you're a cabinet maker. And I said, oh, yeah, Fred, no worries. He goes, mate, I need something. Come over to my house in Collaroy and I need a big fish tank. So I made Freddie this big a cabinet that this fish tank sat on. So that was, that was pretty cool.
I was going to say building a fish tank would be a lot of pressure. A lot of pressure.
I know. But obviously it was great to come into Freddie's house. You know, he, at the time I was only young, really young, and got to know him a bit. And, yeah, it was pretty satisfying as a youngster.
So apart from that, what's an achievement in your life you're most proud of?
Oh, obviously my family, my daughter, you know. We have one child and Azura's just, you know, everything to us. And it's amazing just, you know, watching her grow and how she loves sport herself and, you know, coaching some of the league tag and Oz tag teams. It's amazing.
Yeah, that's great. What's the best piece of advice you've ever been given?
Oh, look, I think, you know, you don't get anywhere in life without working hard for it. So work ethic was sort of drummed into us by both my parents. I saw them work tirelessly to provide for myself and my younger brother and sister. So I think, yeah, you don't get anywhere in life without working hard for it.
You are a very motivational speaker, and I know you work hand-in-hand a lot with our man Matthew Elliott. How important are words to people?
Well, say again, I missed the last part.
No, how important are words to people? Because some people say it's only words, but words can make a difference to people's lives. You're dealing often with, especially part of the Change Room program, with people whose lives are in real disrepair. How important are the right words to motivate people to get off, you know, get off the canvas?
I think when you're speaking, just be genuine, you know, and honest. And I sort of come from a lived experience with my sort of talk and what I sort of present, and that's through sort of lifestyle, nutrition, and the things that you can control and change to, you know, better your sleep and your energy production. Therefore, that all flows on to work life and how you feel each day. So it's when I sort of talk about the injuries that I faced and how I come out of them and the things that I do and continue to do, I think real lived experience really hits home to some people. And, you know, because life is always up and down, you know, so you got to sort of ride the highs, and then when you're in the lows, that's when your true character comes out. So it's interesting. You know, lived experience is really a key thing that people listen to and lean into.
And you, and we're going to move on from your actual rugby league stuff in a tick, but you had horrendous injuries. You're one of the best fullbacks I've ever seen, and we're often talking about how great that position is, both past and present. But you still played over 300 games. You had the most debilitating injuries you could ever imagine and found a way to overcome them. And I'm sure professionally that's got to be one of the most satisfying things you've ever done.
Oh, 100%. Like, you know, the first, 6 years of my career, I basically didn't get injured at all. I played all these games and things were coming really easy to me. I played in 3 grand finals in a row and I got a chance to win one at 22 and, you know, playing for Australia and winning Origin Series. It was an amazing run. But, you know, I was burning the candle at both ends and I wasn't looking after myself off the field. And, you know, it all come crashing down for 4 years with a series of back injuries, neck injuries, leg injuries. So that's when I sort of evolved and become much more of a leader and really dived into the role that, you know, nutrition or lifestyle and recovery plays on your health, immediate health, long-term health, all that type of stuff. And it was just, now looking back, it was a blessing in disguise to the business that I have now and the speaking stuff that I do now. It was all part of that journey when I got injured.
Incredible. Just have a look at x-rays or be online of Anthony Minicello when he was at his most injured, and it's remarkable. Let's talk about your favourite sport other than rugby league.
I like watching all sports. I love my tennis now. I could play tennis every day if I had the time. I'm watching all the majors. I love that. Formula One is probably up there, right up there now. And I've got my daughter hooked on it as well. She's a massive Kimi Antonelli fan at Mercedes. So it's just a great sport that we're both into, which is pretty cool. So obviously the American sports and watching the Knicks win this year's series over in New York was huge.
It's captured everybody's attention, that, hasn't it?
Yeah, amazing. You know, I watched all those games and it's you know, when someone hasn't won for so long and they get the chance to win, I love the people and the fans and how elated they are. And even watching the World Cup at the moment, it's amazing. It's pretty cool.
Yeah, I've told this story before that I lived in America as a kid in the late 70s, and I think the Knicks had previously won in 73. And 1977-78, New York is frustrated that they haven't won again. And it took until 2026, which is quite remarkable. So what's a bucket list sporting event you'd like to go and see? Is it Wimbledon? Is it Monaco? Where would you go?
Yeah, well, I've done a Super Bowl, so I've ticked that box, which is a massive bucket list. Yeah, definitely. My wife's actually been to the F1 in Monaco, so she's ticked that box. But I definitely want to do that. All of them around over in Europe, when the F1's racing, is just amazing. So one of those for sure, and definitely Wimbledon. That's, you know, it's just a classic event. It looks amazing. So lots on the bucket list.
I can see you puncing around with strawberries and cream too.
Yeah.
I can picture that beautifully. What was your favourite TV show as a kid?
As a kid, as a young kid, you know, The Simpsons were always a favourite, right? Because it's all on every night.
Yeah.
So you just whack it on. And, you know, your dad would come up and change the channel back to the news, you know.
Who is that lavatory linksman, Smithers?
Homer Simpson, sir, one of the fork and spoon operators from Sector 7G.
Well, he's certainly got a loose waggle. Perhaps I've finally found a golfer worthy of a match with Monty Burns, eh?
Oh, 80 years. I don't know. Two and a Half Men was pretty funny.
Oh, nice. Yeah, love Two and a Half.
Yeah.
All right, what about movies? Your favourite movie of all time?
Sort of set in the south of France where they're a bit, they deceive people. What's it called? Oh, film. I'm not like a massive movie buff either, but it'll come to me when if it comes back into my head.
Yeah, just shout it out apropos nothing. Can you cook?
Yeah, love cooking. I'm pretty standard. I do a lot of slow cooking and sort of meat on the pan or the barbie. But yeah, love to cook. I get home and I can't just sit on the lounge and laze around. I just sort of just get in the kitchen and start chopping, and I find it sort of relaxing.
So it would be a good mix. We could be roomies. You can do all the cooking and, you know, fluffing about, and I'll just relax on the lounge. I love it. So with your cooking skills, Anthony Minicello, you're hosting a dinner party. Which three people, alive or dead, are you inviting?
Ooh. Everyone goes all the amazing sports stars, but I'm sort of left field a bit. I would have Dr. Joe Dispenza. If anyone knows him, he's in that sort of meditation sort of health realm. He's amazing. Who else would I would have sort of, because when I listen to books and podcasts, it's all in that sort of longevity space. So people like that really interest me, and I could just throw a heap of questions at. So not just the traditional Michael Jordan and all that, which would be pretty cool. But, yeah, I'm in that sort of health, longevity, you know, living well past 100, all those people that are diving into the science behind all that, they're the guys that I would invite.
Yeah, it sounds like it would be a very zen occasion. All right, some quick hitters here to finish with. What's your favourite holiday destination?
I'll be home, sort of country of Italy is always a favourite, but the Maldives probably my number one.
What's your take on clowns, Mini? Great fun or terrifying?
No, I think they're fun. My wife would say terrifying, but I think they're fun.
Summer or winter?
Summer.
Chocolate or vanilla?
Chocolate.
Sweet or savoury?
Ooh, I like both.
Yeah, that's fine. That's acceptable. Peanut butter, crunchy or smooth? There's only one right answer here, though.
See, as a kid, it was smooth.
But have you moved on to crunchy or you just don't eat?
No, I don't have too much of the peanut butter anymore, but, yeah, it was always smooth.
Mm. No, that's fair. And the last one, this defines you very much, Anthony Minicello. Tomato sauce, cupboard or fridge?
It's in the fridge.
Attaboy. You've got the last one right. Anthony Minicello, lovely to catch up as always and fantastic getting to know you, mate. Thanks for doing this.
Appreciate it, Andrew. Good stuff, mate.
On ABC Sport, let's hear our man of sound, Dennis Carnahan's Song of the Week.
Well, if you are a fan of the Sharks, you would have loved last Saturday. Dolphins Park, the Dolphins Zilch, the Sharks 66. Well, it just wasn't the Dolphins' day. Over 10,000 fans came to watch him play. They saw the Dolphins licked by Knicks to 66. Kalfusi, K-L-E-R-O, Ketoa, Mulitalo. Halftime was 24-0, but they wanted many more still. A second try from K-L-E-R-O, Jesse Ramey and then Nico. Number 8 went to Ketoa, then Hazelton went over. Nico scored his second, Jesse Ramey number 11. 11 tries meant they had 11 kicks. And that day, Nico Hines just couldn't miss. He got all his kicks en route to 66. Well, the poor old Dolphins couldn't even win the toss. It was the Sharks' biggest win, the Finns' biggest loss. Nico got all his kicks en route to 66. 11 from 11 kicks. Sharks got all their kicks en route to 66.
Woo! Discover more great ABC podcasts, live radio, and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.